How hard is it to be a financial advisor? I'm going to talk about that today. Hey, what's up, party people? It's me, Sarah G with the Smack, and I'm back. I am a CFA charter holder, and I used to be a financial advisor. On this podcast, I provide non-BS oriented, straight up views on LinkedIn and other financial advisor marketing topics. You can't get this anywhere else, people. So if that's of value, then please subscribe. And if not, then please leave this podcast right now. All right. So how hard is it to be a financial advisor? A lot of people are in this business because once you get established, it is a very nice business. However, in getting there, it is brutal, bloody murder. Some people get to it fast and other people have been in the business for decades and haven't gotten there and will never get there. And even for the people who are established, it's still a kind of hard business to have. And I'm going to talk about the five reasons why in this podcast. So the first one is it's a high liability job. People are very emotional about their money. Everyone has some illogical, harebrained belief about money. I don't care how rational, educated, sensible the person is. I think somewhere in there, there's some crazy belief that everybody has about their money or a crazy, like kind of emotional take on things when it comes to money. And there ain't no telling them any different. As a financial advisor, you have to deal with that. Finance tends to draw in people who have at least some kind of an analytical ability. And when they get into the role of the financial advisor, all of a sudden they find themselves having to deal with emotions and behaviors instead of the facts and the figures and people's money. And I think that's what makes it hard, because even if you do everything right, technically the client can feel that they weren't treated fairly because of the highly emotionally charged nature of people's attitudes towards their money. Okay. And so, I mean, it's true in any profession. Anytime you're an entrepreneur, the client can sue you, the client can complain, whatever. But in this one, the legal repercussions are very serious. All right. And sometimes they can even be financially very serious for the financial advisor. Assessing risk tolerance is a huge source of liability. The client feels like their money was mismanaged in terms of usually it's the advisor taking too much risk. The kind of, way that advisors and their clients are diametrically opposed to each other is that the client has these emotions that they themselves may not even understand about their money. But at the same time, the advisor's motivation is very clear. The financial rewards for getting your clients to invest in equities as opposed to bonds or cash are way higher, all right, financially, most of the time. Now, that's not true if someone's working on a flat fee, working on an hourly fee, all right? But if you're an asset gatherer managing with an AUM fee, you are, most of the time, the way it's arranged in most practices, intrinsically motivated to get your clients to take on more risk. And this bias, seeing it through this veil, makes it hard to determine what your client's true risk tolerance really is. And a lot of times this requires more than just the risk tolerance questionnaire. Most FAs don't put enough energy into that because their emotions are acting on them. You know, they want to move the client towards the goal for them, which is seeing that money get ACATed over, seeing the account active and starting to getting paid fees on it. So how can you make this part of your practice easier? The best thing is to really listen and understand, have a very thorough onboarding process, and also to be very selective about who it is that you actually do business with in the first place. A lot of times, emotional instabilities and attitudes are evident if you really pry in the beginning of the relationship. And by that, I mean the first meeting. So if you're going out there sales pitching or talking all about how great you are in the first meeting, you may miss that you're sitting across from a potentially very damaging client in terms of liability to your business. So you really got to kind of use your powers of observation early on in the process and weed out those clients that are going to potentially get you into trouble. which could be any client, by the way, you never know. But like I said, I've just found for me, whenever I have some kind of a train wreck of a relationship in my life or in my business, it was like pretty obvious in the beginning, but I just was not looking for it. So I've learned to open my eyes to that, which I'm grateful for. Number two reason financial advisor is a hard job. It's an unfairly competitive industry due to low barriers to entry. And I want you to just notice that I said the word industry, not a profession. This is not a profession where the more qualified people win, like being a doctor, being a lawyer, where credentials can really help you get ahead. This is an industry where the better salespeople win. And if you look at what the training programs are in this industry, I mean, a lot of these programs will take almost anyone who doesn't have a major criminal record. And this is just a training culture that is basically stuck in the 1980s. There are a lot of immoral individuals that make the cut because they haven't gone out and like killed somebody or something like that. But the training in this industry is just absolutely abhorrent at many of these big programs. It's a kind of churn and burn scenario where right from the start, these financial advisors are taught how to sell, sell, sell. And then you see, I mean, I know that there's this trend of like people starting up RIA firms, et cetera, but wirehouses, insurance, broker dealers. I mean, there's a lot of money wrapped up in that whole thing too. And the people who are running these programs know that they have a lot to financially gain from encouraging people to go out, sell insurance or sell some financial product to everybody in their circle that will trust them enough to buy it. And then if they're not still selling enough at the end of 3 months, 6 months, then they can get rid of the financial advisor and just keep those clients. That in fact is a major business development strategy for them. The people who are doing this know how to do it. They've been doing it for years and they're expert at it. Until that goes away, I don't really see how this is going to really be a high quality industry with high ethics. I think it's always going to be a morally flawed in general, right? And again, I'm talking about a certain percentage of advisors, but that's not an insignificant percentage. I know there are some really, really ethical people doing great stuff out there for clients. But if you look at it across the spectrum, there's so much of it that's not that way. All right. And so what you have is that you essentially as an advisor are penalized for being virtuous. You have immoral people who are willing to lie. They're trained to lie and they're good at lying and being able to get away with it. And going head to head, it's hard to beat a liar because the client can't see the difference. And when you go head to head with a liar, you're always going to lose because they'll just basically say anything to make themselves look better. And then that's very, very hard to sell against, you know, and the industry and even the regulators kind of support it. Even if they say they don't, they still do. I mean, why do you think everywhere you go, everyone in the industry is always virtue signaling? It's because they know that that's something they have to compensate for. And again, you know, the marketing can be very convincing in many of these scenarios. I mean, why is there a fiduciary standard and a suitability standard? Have you ever heard of a doctor who had to follow the Hippocratic Oath sometimes, but not all the time, depending on differences in licensure? Don't be confused, people, okay? This is not a profession. This is an industry, and the better salespeople will win, and the barriers to entry are very low. So that is another thing that I believe in some ways prevents the very good, highly moral people from rising up so easily. Not saying you can't, but so the action steps, I would say get a good mentor. If you are sensing that the competition is tough, I mean, of course, I'm going to tell you to learn how to market yourself because I'm a marketing person. I have a million blogs on how to market yourself on LinkedIn. I have a book I wrote about it. I have a membership program. I'm a consultant, all of this, right? So obviously learning how to market yourself better from either me or somebody else. The other thing that you could do is to get a good mentor. When I was an advisor, I did not have a mentor, and I think I really could have benefited from it. Not that I wouldn't have ended up in the same place, and I'm very happy where I am, believe that I found the right thing for me, but I do think that there are good mentors and there are bad mentors. You got to find the right one. But being able to model yourself after somebody who's already made it within this kind of a competitive environment, I think could be very helpful. The number three reason why it's so hard to be a financial advisor is that the service is not really set up to encourage long-term investing. There's no real transparency about track records. So who's ever best at presenting themselves as the next Warren Buffett is just going to win. It's hard to be a patient, long-term focused investor because there's always some financial advisor out there who will do a portfolio review for free under the guise of passing a second set of eyes on it. You know what the line, I mean, probably you've already used these lines yourself, right? You know, this is complimentary, no obligation. Just want to see if I could give you three good ideas about how to make it better. I mean, it's just a sales tactic that is common. And there's nothing wrong with that. But what the risk is that these folks could just very easily convince a client who's open to it that if they had invested with them for the last, for example, 3 years or 5 years, it would have been better. The client may or may not believe them. And if you've not had great performance in the short term, then it is hard to keep clients. You can have all the long-term spiel that you want, but you've got the DIYers out there on the internet, these internet influencers that have these blogs with hundreds of thousands of followers because they're not regulated financial advisors. They're just these kind of talking heads out there. And they can say whatever they want basically and not have to deal with the repercussions of it. And a lot of them do kind of step over the line, but regulators really haven't caught on to it. So you have all these DI, you know, these people out here who are saying, just follow my blog or read my book or go to my workshop and you can manage your own money, right? You have the news and the media talking about, you know, you should buy this on the dip or that. And so there's a lot of temptation out there. If you do it right, the other thing is you're kind of a boring financial advisor. Being a long-term investment manager, if you do it right, is kind of boring because you're not timing the markets. You're not coming to that client with the next hottest idea. You don't really have that much to say other than if a life event happens and you have to totally rebalance their asset allocation. If you're a good long-term focused investment manager, you know, the market's going to crash. And when it does, you just say, stay the course. And, you know, you kind of got to handhold a little bit through that. But for the most part on the ongoing, you know, you're not too exciting to the client. And so you do have these other advisors circling around like sharks smelling blood in the water. And that makes it a little bit hard sometimes. So what can you do to counteract that? I would advise focusing on other aspects of the relationship, such as client service, technology, and planning, and also just having great regular communications, being as polished and professional as you can be, and just coming up with other ways to enrich the lives of the clients and their networks. That can really help to take the emphasis off of the market. You never want to have just one reason why the client is in love with you. You really want to have them in love with you for a number of different reasons. Number four reason being a financial advisor is hard is that it's not really a financial job. And a lot of people get into this because they love the stock market. Wrong. If you are spending your time on Bloomberg all day, your practice is absolutely going to suffer. That's not who succeeds in the business. It's the people who are in many cases willing to like be the personal butler to their clients emotionally and like willing to like babysit their clients' kids because the nanny got sick. Okay. Like if I go buy a subscription from QuickBooks, the salesperson who sells me the deal isn't the one who services my account. Those are two completely different skill sets. But here, what you have in this industry is that people don't want to make lower margins. So they don't want to give up a dollar of money. So they take it all and they do it all, right? And so you have the advisor sells and then services. And that can sometimes compromise value because like I said, you don't have the focus on the sale and the communications and improving those skills. And then you also don't have the focus on the delivering of the service offering. And that's an entirely different ballgame. So it's very divided into two different, I feel like a little bit distracted even in some ways. So that's a misconception, because that's not necessarily how the job is put out there. If you're that unhappy doing this, then hire somebody else, outsource the role of servicing the accounts, and just go be the money manager at your own practice, but you'll have to give up some of the dough. Or if you are not even in the industry yet, but you're thinking about it, listening to this podcast, if you want to go manage money, I'm just going to tell you right now, this is not the job for you. You should go become a portfolio manager. Analyst, right? Should go like take the CFA or get a master's in finance or an MBA or something like that. Fifth thing is that there's zero differentiation from one advisor to the next. And this is because the more established you are as an advisor, the more risk averse you become. It's hard to be a financial advisor and get new clients and grow unless there's something different or better about your practice. You have to set yourself apart, but then the more established you get, the rewards for taking risk will decrease. And then what it winds up being is that there's no real difference from one advisor to the next other than their personalities and how much of a match it is with the client. And this is due to risk aversion and fear. And then once you get successful and you're making $500,000 a year, it becomes even harder to rock the boat. You don't want to stir the pot and disrupt your existing practice, your existing client base. New financial advisors may be more receptive to this message and be able to set up something that's actually different. The more established you become as an advisor, it seems like the more kind of set in your ways and complacent you become. What happens is then there's an innovation, like what's happening now with the robo-advisors. And all of a sudden you're inherently at a disadvantage because you're doing financially well enough to not accept that there's has to be a new way to do things, you think. And then, you know, maybe a few clients leave, or you start to feel the pinch, or people are talking about fee compression, and it becomes a major catastrophe because the innovation kind of snuck up on you because you weren't looking at, well, how am I better? How am I different? You weren't in that mindset. And this is because it can become very comfortable financially after you do become established. The innovation can kind of get you and put you in a bad position, catch you flat-footed. So the action steps, what can somebody do to make sure this doesn't happen to them or to lessen this? I mean, I could just say that I'm not a financial advisor anymore. Obviously, I was at one point. If I were to do it all over again, I would create a highly differentiated service offering, offering laser-focused services to a very small niche and doing something radically different than everybody else. And if someone didn't want to work with me because this didn't fit them, then, you know, then so be it. But I would directly market to that niche using social media and using SEO to expand beyond my local reach. I would overcome the bounds of geography. And I would build a practice of only 70 really deep relationships with highly profitable clients, which I know people cringe when I say the word profitable, but it's better for the clients if you have fewer but more profitable, deeper relationships. I've often said that you could have a practice of only 70 clients, and if you do it correctly, have it be a very nice practice for everybody involved. And then, of course, it's better for you because you're not turning around trying to run like you've got your hair on fire to find the next deal. And you don't have to worry as much because the relationships are deep. You're providing value in a variety of ways, and there aren't as many threats to the relationships leaving. That's what I would do. I would go get myself 70 clients. I mean, only 70 people in the world that fit a particular, very specific description. I would take my time getting there. That meant that I had to get a second job. That's the other thing advisors don't like to do, but either you could go into debt and, you know, sacrifice your own financial solvency in the beginning, or you can just be able to look the person in the eye and say it on your ADV, obviously, and then say to them, look, I'm setting up this practice. I want to do this in the right way. I don't want to pressure my clients. And so for that reason, I do have to supplement my income while I am building this up with other sources. If that is not suitable to you, then I apologize, but I'm afraid we won't be working together because this is how I have to do it in fairness to everybody involved. That's what I'd do if I were to do it all over again to overcome this differentiation issue. If you want to work with me, I'm available as an hourly consultant. I have a membership program, and I also have two books, one about a financial advisor marketing plan that won't stress you out, and the other one is about how to use LinkedIn Messenger. Both of these are linked in the blog attached to this podcast. They're on my website. So thanks for listening, and I will see you in the next one.